And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to Noon Show, with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 to Noon Show on this Tuesday, the 26th of March, 2024. How are you all keeping? It's great to have you on board, and hopefully we'll keep you informed and entertained over the next 3 hours, and the lines are open for you to get involved in those conversations. Trigger your own. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. If you want to email us, that might be easier for you. comments@highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the program, feel free to do so. We're across Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport. We're on the X platform as well, streaming live to the world, and you can watch us on your big screen TV or your Fire Stick if you have either of those devices by going to YouTube Ireland, just typing in Highland Radio. And also good if you could give us a like and a subscribe. It's all very useful to help spread the word. Right. The papers this morning, not surprising that we're sort of seeing a political shift at the moment, mostly or much, I would say, down to a great extent, the outcome of the two referendums, because maybe the political parties are now starting to see which way the wind is blowing, so to speak. But anyway, the Irish Times: the government planned hate speech legislation should be brought back to the drawing board, according to a former Minister for Justice. That's Charlie Flanagan. Mr. Flanagan has called for the ditching of the proposed hate speech bill and said he would advise new Fine Gael party leader Simon Harris to concentrate on programme for government priorities: housing, health and law and order. The proposed legislation, which also covers hate crime, stalled in the Seanad last summer amid concerns about its script and impact on freedom of speech. Mr. Flanagan posted on social media website X saying housing and health are priorities and the core values for Fine Gael include supporting business and farm families. He added, ditch the ill-defined hate bill and go back to basics, effectively. That chimes with an awful lot of what of our listeners think on this programme as well. And also, interestingly, last night or yesterday, Sinn Féin have turned their back on the hate speech bill, it would seem. Sinn Féin did back it in the Dáil, which you kind of would have to in order to propose amendments. I think Sinn Féin put forward 12 of 95-odd amendments, which some might say is actually really quite low for arguably the leading opposition party. But anyway, now their justice spokesperson has also started to indicate that their party is looking for it to be scrapped, back to the drawing board. And I think really the penny's starting to drop. People don't want talk, they want action. So they don't want votes on carers. What they want is proper supports for carers. They don't want votes on women's place in the home. They want, you know, proper legislation to support women and maybe stop having medical crises that seem to primarily fail women. So there is a political swing ongoing in this country at the moment. Not surprising, I suppose, as we head towards a series of elections. It'll be interesting to watch it unfold and also to see a lot of the media. I mean, I think we are pretty balanced here. We talk about most things, don't we? And all different types of views are expressed, but that's not the case across the board. So it'll be interesting to see how some of the national media backpedal on some of this stuff as well. Because if you back the government to the hilt, or you back a particular party to the hilt, when they change their position, you must change yours as well. Not a style of journalism I would like to be involved in. The Irish Independent: households hoarding or throwing away plastic drink bottles and cans have left millions of euro in unclaimed deposits in shops taking part in the deposit return scheme. In the first 40 days of the scheme, 1.2 million euro worth of deposits were returned to customers in the form of vouchers issued by reverse vending machines. That's quite a high number because it's 15% of the total spent on these drinks, isn't it? 1.2 million, it's 15 cent. No, that's ridiculous. It's not 15%. It's 15 cent. That's a lot of 15 cents, effectively, is what I'm trying to say here. What are you doing? Are you returning the bottles? How's that working for you? Are you hoarding them? Some of the people in this building, just doing a quick straw poll, they are hoarding the bottles, and then at some point they'll go and get all the refunds all at the one time. So that might account for the missing bottles, in inverted commas. However, that's only a fraction of the amount the scheme is believed to have taken in over that time. when I referenced the 1.2 million. It means shoppers are either holding onto their empty containers, I'm wondering are you, until they have enough to return in bulk, or are continuing to dispose of them via recycling or waste bins. So are you just chucking the bottles in the bins? Let us know, 086 60 25,000. On average, 5 million beverage bottles and cans are sold in Ireland daily, the vast majority by retail outlets, now obliged to charge a deposit of 15 cent to 25 cent on each, depending on container size. So I don't know, is that a success? Is it not a success? Is it a waste of time? I don't know. Let us know what you think. Now, we spoke to Luke Ming-Flanagan after he won his case against a former Europarliamentary assistant. This person had got access to his Twitter account. It was Twitter at that time. And he typed in, what he did is he tweeted what appeared to look like a search. Saoirse McHugh photo skinny dipping. Misspelled, sent at a certain amount of time. It was clearly designed to damage the MEP as much as is possible. But anyway, the person responsible has been found guilty and he was sentenced. And here is his sentence. A former European parliamentary assistant was sentenced to 150 hours of community services yesterday after admitting hacking MEP Luke Ming-Flanagan's Twitter account. Dermot Hayes, 34, sent a tweet from Mr. Flanagan's account that referred to former Green Party candidate Saoirse McHugh skinny dipping. Hayes from Dublin was sentenced at a hearing in the Palace of Justice in Brussels. If he fails to comply with this order, he could face a prison sentence of 15 months. He was also fined €5,000 and has to pay court-related costs. In reaction, Luke Ming said, done and dusted, he got 150 hours community service, has to pay €5,000 compensation plus costs, destroyed his life, my family, and I are now heading off to have pancakes and enjoy the sun. On to the Star now this morning, a Garda who was drunk when she sent her partner a picture of drugs and a text message saying, baby, I got you this, has been given 6 months in jail for stealing a 70-euro cannabis exhibit from her station. Garda Holly Lane, just 34, denied theft of the cannabis evidence seized by another officer, unlawful possession of the cannabis and having it for sale or supply at Store Street Station on December 12, 2021. However, Judge John Hughes found her guilty yesterday evening following a non-jury trial at Dublin District Court. He imposed a 9-month term but suspended the final 3 months on condition she remained on supervised probation for 2 years and attended counselling for alcohol and drug addiction. Lane had been suspended since the date of the incident and her Garda career is over. Garda Sergeant Colleen Doherty told the hearing she had been the station officer in charge. However, and got a Lane shift started at 7 p.m. However, at 1:30, she had not seen Lane for several hours and went to seek her out. Garda Peter Byrne in the community policing office told her Lane was unsteady on her feet. Sergeant Doherty grew concerned and searched for Lane with Garda Sergeant Niall Godfrey. She was found in the second floor changing room, dishevelled looking, and her tie and shoes were wet. Sergeant Doherty believed that Lane was intoxicated from the way she presented and spoke to her. So that's her career over, in policing anyway. On to the Irish Sun. A significant development on a global scale yesterday. The United Nations Security Council passed a resolution demanding a ceasefire in Gaza for the rest of Ramadan. The US abstained from the vote, which is really the big news story here, with the other 14 council members, including Russia, China and the UK, all voting in favour. The resolution also demanded the immediate unconditional release of all hostages and emphasised the urgent need to expand the flow of humanitarian assistance to the Gaza Strip. And off the back of this is where I was due to attend a meeting, delegates in Washington. They cancelled that meeting, but they are very dependent on US funding and weapons to continue their actions in the Middle East there. And finally, in the Mirror this morning, Sinn Féin TD Eoghan O'Brien said he was uncomfortable watching Piers Macaulay's funeral. IRA member Macaulay was sentenced to 14 years in jail for the 1996 manslaughter of Detective Garda Gerry McCabe. Macaulay got 12 years for stabbing his wife Pauline Tully, now a Sinn Féin TD, in 2014. His coffin was draped in a tricolour in Strabane last Thursday. O'Brien said Sinn Féin wasn't in any way involved in that funeral. Certainly, I was very uncomfortable watching it, given Piers Macaulay's treatment of my party colleague Pauline Tully. Mr. O'Brien said, in his view, Macaulay was not a Republican. And also, as part of really quite, I don't know how you would describe it. I don't want to be critical, but Simon Harris's speech that he made, having been appointed Fine Gael leader, he referenced that as well. And he was, take back our flag. And it was kind of a, I don't know, it didn't seem really in keeping with the personality we know of him, not on the substantive issue, but just on the behaviour. But anyway, now, just before we move on, we were talking yesterday about a number of residents in the Ballymacool area who are facing eviction because the owners of the property, namely Twin Estates, have expressed their intention to sell the properties. There is an eviction date of April 12th, and families were reassured. It was, I don't know how you describe the language on the show yesterday, that Twin Estates can't say that they should stay beyond April 12th, but they should be assured that they don't have to. I don't know, I'm trying to paraphrase it, but anyway, it was quite confusing. I understand what was trying to be said, but trying to reiterate it is quite difficult. But anyway, there was some criticism of the council and them perhaps suggested that they were dragging their feet on this issue. We contacted the communications department and they issued the following statement. The Letterkenny office of Donegal County Council continues to liaise with Phil Boyle of Twin Estates in relation to the acquisition of the properties at the Forest Ballymacool with a view to acquiring the properties under the tenant in situ scheme. So that's ongoing. And I think really what Twin Estates were looking for was some sort of language that they could would be firm enough that they could maybe defer sale. I don't know. That's the impression I got in any case. Right, let's talk about the LIS scheme. Breed joins us now. Hi, Breed.
Hello, Greg. How are you? Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining me, Breed. Right. Okay, so talk to us about your situation as much as you're comfortable in doing so and your dealings with the LIS scheme, LIS scheme.
Well, my main question is, how do people in rural Donegal get access to the rural improvement scheme when they don't hold, it's just an upgrade of a laneway or non-public road, when you don't have access to a herd number?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we applied. In my case, we live on a lane which provides access to four houses, and none of the families are involved in agriculture, so no one has a herd number. Everybody's working, paying their taxes. This laneway has been upgraded by the council twice, maybe in the last 50 years. The last time it was done was possibly 24, 25 years ago, and it's getting in bad. It needs a resurface.
Mm-hmm.
We maintain the sides of the road, and we do that ourselves. But the resurfacing of it, that's my main question.
Okay, we'll try and get some answers. We'll try and get some answers, Breed. But if the council in the past took responsibility for this road, does that mean it is a council road, or is it deemed as a private road?
No, it's a private. It's a laneway. It's a non-public road. It was tarred probably when I was younger, 50 years ago, when there was only one or two houses there.
Right.
Now, when we built our house 25 years ago, it was resurfaced then, and now there's a fourth house after being built. It needs an upgrade there at the main road. There's a few bad potholes, and it needs that. But applying for the local LIS, we did that in 19. We got a letter last year asking for a herd number and maps and, accounts from a farmer. And there's no one uses the land here for farming. So none of us have herd numbers.
So it sounds like really effectively you tick all the boxes. Whether it be this year or next year, whatever, even if you had to wait, but you're being disadvantaged because you don't have a herd number. Why would you be treated differently? Yeah. As you say, it's four families all paying their tax, all contributing to society. Why are you being treated different because you none of the families have access to a herd number? That sounds like it to me in a nutshell.
There's plenty more people in the same situation, but I think it needs to be highlighted.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my question.
Stay
so,
there, Breed. Do not go anywhere. Micheál Colm McGillan Aspig's an independent councillor. He joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Micheál.
Martin White, Craig, is my contribution.
Yeah, Breed has outlined her understanding of the LIS scheme. Are you excluded if you don't have access to a HERD number?
Yes, you are. And even if you have a HERD number, you're excluded as well. Mm. And I think Breed outlined it very well there. My niece, a family in Maharoti are in the same position as Breed, as the rest of the county. The government... I've been at this for a very, very long time, and actually even had a meeting way back then with the minister to request a change in the policy. I've been using Thomas Pringle, and I'm grateful to Thomas, who's been raising this issue as a question for me to the minister in terms of changing the policy. The policy doesn't fit our community. It clearly doesn't fit our community, because if you look at those who applied since 2017, and bear in mind that Fianna Fáil and the Gael, the governments back then removed the LIS, I think it was in 2011, to pay out bankers around the time they crashed the economy. So it was only 2017 that it was reintroduced, but unfortunately when it was reintroduced, it was pennies that they gave us. Actually, I at the time, I think we spoke about it, that it was very patronising of them. Because what it done was, with the crumbling roads, infrastructure to a lot of homes, people expectations were raised, and they had hoped that by applying, and especially those that had applied previous to the Fianna Fáil government removing the LIS supported by Fine Gael, they thought then that they'd be still in a better chance of getting it done. Yeah. But they haven't. They haven't, because the monies that were sent in, and we done a sit down one time.
Well, how can I just, before we get to that, how much, like, do you know off the top of your head what the LIS allocation was for 2024 or 2023? Maybe it might be easier.
Oh, Jesus, I don't. I would need to go back on my figures in terms of what it has been for the county. What happens is that it's broke up to five pieces, and each area then, so if you take the Glenties Municipal District area and the Glenty, which I represent, from the five pieces is broken down to, which leaves it very little, but then it leaves it a lot less then when you break it into the quarters. So you have South Igibara, you have Mohanlia, Gajibal and Nafinya, then you have Muharorti, Gartahaike, and then Gidor. And when you break that down, you're only talking about a handful of roads that get done. And since the minister, instead of opening up the grant scheme with proper funding and with less restrictions, mm-hmm. What they've done is they've tightened it. And people of West Donegal have found themselves in a position. So who's farming in West Donegal?
Right.
There's very little cattle.
But just
yes,
in relation to the figure for last year was $1 million for repairs to roads and laneways in Donegal. 100,000 specifically for offshore island roads. Where does that money go?
Yes, for the islands.
Yeah, but it's $1 million for the mainland, 100,000 for the islands. But who determines that? You know, who's getting this money? Is it who, you know? Or
right. So what happens, like I said, was that's broken into a fifth, right? So you do a fifth of that there, and then you do a quarter of, you break it into fours then, and you're left with very little
right,
money.
So it's 50 grand.
And then what happens is the government... Sorry. And then what happens is that the engineers sit down, they assess the roads, and then they allocate, now in conjunction with us, but the real decision really sits with the engineers, and then they allocate. But the difficulty, Greg, here is a number of things. To qualify for an LIS, as Breed outlined very clearly, you need to be farming on the land. And as I say, who is farming in West Donegal and rural areas when Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael has forced their people to the four corners? It's not sustainable now for farmers.
So do you know off the top of your head if that money that's not spent in West Donegal ends up then going to other parts of the county, or is it sent back?
Oh, no, it's always spent. Hmm. Oh, no, in West Donegal we're fantastic staff. If they gave us 10 million, we would spend the money if they allow us. But the problem is they're not funding us properly and adequately. So there's three ways to get an LIS. If you're farming and you're getting reps payments, or if you're cutting turf And again, how many people unfortunately are cutting turf because they're forced away? Or if you're harvesting seaweed, and there's very little people harvesting seaweed. There's only a few actually that is involved in seaweeding, and a tough enough job that is. But so the criteria has to change. And it's not that we don't want to do roads. Of course we want to do roads. It's important that we do roads. This is the, by not doing roads and roads up to Breed's okay. house or anybody else's house, what happens is that the road gets in such a state. The road gets in such a state that you could be talking about 30,000-40,000 to maintain a road. I so if you have four houses like Breed's has, 10 grand, they choose 10 grand to spend on a road when they're barely able to pay a mortgage back or pay
so,
rent.
So really, it's just not there. Under the current scheme, there's not much hope for, well, certainly there's not much hope for Breed, either with
there's
or
no
without
hope for
a
Breed.
Herd number. It's the, so the LAS scheme, so people listening who think, right, maybe this LAS scheme could be the could help us out here, you're saying you'd have to be really, really lucky to be one of the very few properties that actually benefit from it.
Well, so before the Fianna Fáil from the Gael government changed the criteria and made it far more harder for us, right? We sat down and we broke it down. Now, this has come back a few years, not only a couple of years. And we estimated on the pennies that were being given, for the pennies that we were being given, it was going to take at least 30 years, at least 30 years to run through the list. And that didn't include the high number of people who have applied since. West Donegal has a massive uptake mm-hmm. in terms of applications for it. And I would, even at that, I would still ask people to continue to put on LIS forms, because the more we express the need and show the need that's there, the more pressure we put on governments. It's coming up to elections. Hammer them at the door. Say to them, tell them, why as in your parties not change the criteria to allow us? We often hear people talk about we're the forgotten county. And for me, we're not the forgotten county. They know exactly where we are, but we're unfortunately the county that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael doesn't care for.
Yeah. All right. Listen, thanks very much for that. So, Breed, I'm afraid not much hope for you. The scheme.
No, there isn't. Yeah. No, there isn't really, because we were led to believe when we, back in 18 or 19, when we did the application, that it would take a few years, but that, you know, more or less we would get it done in 4 or 5 years. But no, that doesn't seem to be happening. It seems to be even more complicated than ever.
Mm. So just to put some figures to it, the breakdown from last year, as Micheál Colum was outlining there, just to take one area for an example, €168,000 was to cover the Donegal Municipal District area, which effectively is from Bundoran to Glencolum Kills. So, I mean, €168,000 for all of that area, it's clearly not enough, even if you had 50 herd numbers, I think, Breed. So I think that the bottom line is we need a different scheme, something a bit more broader.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's not good for you, I'm afraid, Breed, but I suppose it's pretty clear where we're at.
It's not, but just that we'll have to highlight it and maybe fight for it. So
sure.
We'll see.
Yeah,
okay.
Definitely. And we'll stay on it. Thank you very much indeed. Take care, Breed. Thanks very much, Councillor Micheál Colum. A caller says $2 million was spent in 2023, but we accept it's not enough. Right. There was an initial allocation of $1 million. So if $2 million was spent, there must have been a later allocation in 2023, just that I didn't get sight of there. All right. We'll be back with more shortly. We were talking yesterday on the programme about the intent of Twin Estates, which has a business address in London, to sell houses in the Ballymacool area of Letterkenny. Twin Estates say they're making this decision for business reasons, but it does mean potentially that a number of families could be without a home. And this all was thrust upon them in the run-up to Christmas. You might remember listening to some of the residents affected by this last October on this show. So it's a story we've been with from the very beginning. The council has released a statement saying that they continue to liaise with Phil Boyle of Twin Estates, who we spoke to yesterday, in relation to the acquisition of the properties at the Forest Ballymacool with a view to acquiring the properties under the tenant in situ scheme. Now, there's sort of three things going on here. Councillor Jerry McMonagall of Sinn Féin joins me. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning.
There's kind of three things going on here, isn't there, in that I understand some residents have entered into negotiations to buy their property that they're living in directly from Twin Estates. There is the tenant in situ scheme, and then there's another scheme as well, which seems to have gone off the radar a little bit. So it can be a little bit confusing for people to follow. Do you want to give a quick recap just as the situation as you see? Because originally it was 19 families, I think, wasn't it, or 18 that were facing the loss of their home.
Yeah, look, and that's what we feared whenever the government lifted the eviction ban. And this was the first tranche of sort of groups of houses that were owned by a single company that the tenants were given notice to quit. So there is a number of schemes, as you said. Some of the tenants are in discussions with Twin Estates in relation to buying out their property. The tenant in situ scheme was available to all our tenants. And then the council itself can buy the houses as well, and the council are working at that. There's a number of houses that they have inspected, and they have received a structural survey report from an engineer, which is recommended that they carry out the IS 465 testing for defective concrete blocks.
Which is not surprising. I don't think anyone purchasing a house anywhere in Donegal would do that without having sight of it, that test, conducting one.
Unfortunately, this is the norm now, and it's normally the vendor who carries out the test and shows that the house is free of defective concrete blocks. So Phil was very much aware of that. The council informed him of that. He has agreed to carry out the test, and he's just waiting clarifications from the council around the testing. And then based on the test, and this is related to Phil on the 13th of March and again on the 21st of March, and on receipt then of the testing results, the council will decide then, well, if there's no defective concrete blocks detected, then they would obviously consider buying these seven properties, which they've inspected to date. And that's where that's at the minute. But we focused a lot on Ballymacool, and I've been representing a number of the tenants there with the council since this news broke in October. But this is right across the county, and particularly in Letterkenny, where a significant number of people are sitting now with eviction notices. And unfortunately, there is not the houses there. On any houses that are becoming available, the rent is so high that people can't afford them. So we're heading into an awful crisis here. It is bigger and wider than Ballymacool. And it's good that the focus was put on the Ballymacool, because there's a significant number of tenants are affected here, but there's a bigger number of tenants right across the county, and particularly, as I said, in Letterkenny, who are sitting today with eviction notices, and it's coming up now in April, May, June and July, and there is not the houses to...
What's the solution to it then? Because if I was a developer... I'm literally just playing devil's advocate here and trying to read the room. I'm not taking a side or anything. But we see a wrangling that's going on in Milford at the moment. We see a wrangling that's going on in Ballymacool. We've heard from developers that say they're going to put their money elsewhere. It's too messy, too complicated. You know, like, I'm not defending Twin Estates for a minute, right? But they're not coming out of this looking fantastic. And as I say, you could say the same of the situation in Milford. So if they're looking to invest or to bring property to the market, be it rental property or whatever, they're probably going to look elsewhere, Jerry. So where are these new houses going to come from if we're in this sort of having these tussles with developers?
Yeah, and look, this is something we've been flagging up for quite a while. The fact is that houses weren't being built. And I don't know what the government was thinking of not building houses and not giving councils the resources to build or acquire houses. But there's such a rigmarole to go through to get permission from the housing department in relation to purchasing houses, whether it be single purchases or multiple purchases from developers who are building houses. And we've had it from, developers who have built houses in recent times have spoke to me and other councillors and said, what is going on with the council? Why is it taking so long? They go through the process. As you say, they have spent their money, they've built the houses, they have an asset, and they have to get there and sell that asset. And if it doesn't go into the public sector, it obviously goes into the private sector. And people who buy that for rental properties, they then put the market rents. And at the minute, their market rents are far too high and that for people to afford, especially here in Donegal.
Mm. What's the solution here? I mean, obviously, it's more social housing, isn't it? I mean, that, but I mean, that the delivery of that, you know, I mean, that's not a short or medium term solution at the moment, unfortunately.
No, and in this term of the council, even, I mean, I would say all councillors are exasperated by the slow movement and the length of time it's taken to go from plan permissions being sought or part dates being given, the council then acquiring the monies from the department to go and actually start the building of houses. And it's just taken far, far too long. Now we're in a situation where the council have got its act together to quite a degree. There seems to be a stream of money coming. They've acquired land banks. There is plans in place now and designs for housing developments across Letterkenny and indeed this MD and indeed the whole county. But this is going to take another 2 or 3 years before houses become available in any numbers. And in the meantime, we have a rising number of tenants who are in situ, who are sitting with eviction notices. I had 3 emails yesterday alone from constituents that I'm working with and trying to get the council to work with them and rehouse them. And they're going to be out within the next 6 weeks.
And what is happening there, do you think, not saying it was contained in the emails, is this people looking, because if you look at the figures, right, if you look at the figures of what the average current rent is in Donegal versus the asking price, I think there's a, you know, the new rental price, I think there's a difference about 400, 500 euro. Yeah. Are landlords, are they sort of finding ways to get people out of their homes so that they can get other people in at the higher rates? Are they saying, you know, this business is not worth it, I'm getting out of it, I just want to sell the house? Do we know what's happening to the rental market in this county? Is it clear?
Well, they have to fill out a form and state their reasons for selling, and that is around that they're selling the property. A family member needs the property, and they have to move out because of that. So that's the reasons they're using. But what's happening is that we have maybe rents at 650, 700, and the next tenant who'll be going into that house will be paying minimum 12, but more than likely 13 or 1400 euros. And that's just not,
I just don't think anyone can afford it. I mean, obviously some people can afford it, but it's not. You're working literally just to rent.
It's non-sustainable. So we have a serious problem. And as I said, I don't want to keep harping back to it, but we look for that eviction ban to be continued for not at fault evictions. Unfortunately, the government lifted that. And now we're seeing the outworkings.
Yeah, but you see, the thing with that, though, is in the absence of social housing being built, we are very reliant on the private market, right? But then to sort of try and extend legislation which ties up the property of it sounds to me like a contradiction, because, like someone told me, whispered to me, they were a landlord. They were an accident landlord. They had a second house. They wouldn't say it out loud. Says, I have another house. You know, it was because it's a dirty word now. The landlord word is dirty. And I think sort of trying to... And it's not helping, is it, when we sort of blame landlords for evicting people and say, right, we're going to compel you by law to keep people in your house. I get both sides of it, Jerry, but, you know, you can't sort of go, right, we really need these private landlords, but also we're going to actually have legislation which, you know, prohibits them from doing with their property what they wish.
Yeah, I know, and I understand, and I do get both sides of it, and I'm not blaming landlords for this, because they have bought something, they invested in something, and they were renting it. But what I'm saying is that the market, and by the government not building social houses, they allowed a market value of rental properties to go through the roof because there was a scarcity of houses. That's the people they blame here, not the landlords, not the people who maybe worked hard all their life and invested a few pounds that they saved in an hour property that they were setting aside for rental properties. But we have here in relation to what the Twin Estates, which is a large company, which has multiple houses, which has now put people of 20 plus out on the street, you know, in April. And that's the reality of this. So it's not, I'm not blaming landlords, but I'm telling you what, it's certainly the government's fault and their policy, because they stopped building social housing, which and firmly relied on the private market. And the backside fell out of that. and no one filled the gap. And that was the government's responsibility to do, Greg. So, no, I'm not blaming landlords. Mm. I'm putting the blame firmly and squarely and firmly in the government's.
There's a lot of property out there, though, you know. I mean, we talk about what you can do in the short term. And again, you know, this is for conversation's sake. I don't be expressing opinions here. If you go on to daft.ie, you might find two or three houses in around Letterkenny. Go on Airbnb and see what the crack is. There's tons of houses.
Yeah, and this is the whole, you know, the policies.
So what do you do there, though? How do you get those houses?
This isn't allowed to happen, you know, and we should be looking at that. And we should be looking at every available home that's available. This year's compounded in Donegal now because of the defective concrete block problem. And here we have now, and if this scheme starts moving, where are we going to put all the people if we get a run at this here and start demolishing houses? Where are the people who are in them houses? Where are they going to live? We've been saying for years that we need to be putting in place the modular type dwellings, even the use of holiday homes for rental in relation to renting people, allowing people to occupy while their houses are being built. And nobody's listening. Nobody takes cognizance of what we're saying. And they certainly take too long to make decisions. And what we are definitely going into a major crisis as regards people who are facing eviction and the lack of social housing and indeed the private market affordable homes that might be available.
Yeah. And listen, you know, there's a number of pressures on the rental market here too, because there are also a lot of people, quite a number of people, demonstrably, albeit anecdotal, I'm not sure the numbers are counted. There's also a lot of people that have exited hotel accommodation and moved into private rental accommodation as well. A whole tranche of people that wouldn't be counted 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And probably are in a position, because of certain schemes, in a position to actually meet the rents that are out there at the moment. Do you know?
Yeah, and them numbers have not been taken into account now for quite a while. And as time goes by, more of those people will be looking for houses, will be moving out of hotel accommodations, B&Bs, et cetera, and will be looking for accommodation. And we just haven't got it. So this crisis is going to continue. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of that, we have the defective concrete block crisis, which is only going to get worse for the people who live in those affected houses. And where do we house them? And that's what we really need to put a focus on now.
Are elected councillors doing enough to keep the pressure on in the chamber on these issues?
Well, I know I've raised it at almost every meeting I attend. I sit on the Housing SPC. I raise it continually. The other issue that we have in relation to housing is those families who, and there's a significant number of them, who are in overcrowded conditions, whose families have got bigger, who have medical needs and serious medical needs in some instances, and we're not buying the houses, the 5 beds, sometimes 6 beds, and certainly not enough 4 beds to meet their demand. So our housing crisis is only going to get worse, and it will do for into the future.
Yeah, unfortunately, sobering, but I think you're correct. Thanks very much for that. That's Councillor Jerry McMonagle there of Sinn Féin. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number if you want to get involved in that conversation. All right, let's say hello to May. Hiya, May.
Hello, Greg.
Nice to speak to you, May. Right, okay, let's talk recycling. You're in favour of recycling, aren't you?
I am, yeah. I am a big believer in recycling. I've always made sure that I recycle as much as possible and put things in the right bins, mm-hmm. and don't throw things away where there's a possibility they can be reused or repurposed or something. So, yeah, a strong believer in it.
So we were talking carry on there, you. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you were saying earlier about now this deposit scheme.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's... I find... Because I've always been a strong believer in recycling anyway, and I have time restraints. I'm quite busy, but no busier than other people, but quite a busy person. Yeah. So I get my shopping delivered. My groceries are delivered every week. So any plastic bottles and that, I now pay the deposit on, which is what's happening. But I now have to keep all my bottles to one side, get them into the car, go to a shop where there's a machine to put the bottles back into, then go into that shop and spend money on something I might not need because I've had my shopping delivered, mm-hmm. to get the deposits back. And I just think it's penalising the people that have always done what they think is right anyway.
Yeah.
And people that are going to throw things in the bin or throw things in the hedges as they're out walking are still going to carry on doing what they're doing because they don't care anyway.
Yep. Yeah, and exactly, because, you know, you were always doing the right thing. And also, too, let's take the environmental side of it. You get your shopping delivered. Of course you're going to be out and about. You're not housebound-like. But you still have to factor in the burning of petrol or diesel to get to that shop. You know, the time it takes for you to stand there feeding the machine. And then you get this strip of paper and, you know, can you redeem the money you get back on in your online shopping?
No, as far as I know, you can't, and the drivers can't take the bottles back either.
Right.
So I have to use a little voucher. So you have to make an effort then to actually go back into that shop, into whichever shop it is, and spend the money in that shop.
But listen, I don't know where you are, but you could be living in Fannad. And you could be getting delivered your groceries delivered by Don's in Letterkenny, right? So now you might go into Letterkenny two or three times a year. Who's to say? Do you know what I mean? So that voucher ends up on the windowsill, probably ends up being burnt by the sun or something, or ends up in a bin. You know, for a lot of people.
Or in the meantime, you have got a shed full of plastic bottles waiting until you physically go to a place where normally they would have gone into the recycling bin and away at a Euro.
Yeah, and maybe people just put it in the recycle bin anyway.
Yeah, and then somebody else then obviously is benefiting from that, and there's a CEO there in a new company getting a nice salary for people that then haven't got the means, and not everybody can drive either. Some people, you know, can't get into the car and go and take the things back, and they're kind of stuck with these things then. And pay an extra for them and not getting the money back on them because they're not able to get them out to get the money back on them.
It never,
so I just think it's a little bit unfair.
I'll be honest with you. Listen, it's up to each individual what they do. But this scheme, I always struggle to make sense of because I said it in a number of interviews. Yeah. The people most inclined to recycle are those that are already doing quite good. Like, it's not going to stop people dumping, which I hate to see, in the same places their takeaway packaging out the window of the car. They don't care about 15 cent. They're just going to dump it out the window.
No,
have you accumulated many plastic bottles yet, May? I mean, have you found a spot for them in the house?
Well, my husband's got a shed, so I've kind of taken up some of his space, actually. But
hold on your second.
Yeah,
then,
so I do try.
May. Would you leave his man cave alone? It's tough enough being a man in this world.
I know, he's not going to be happy with me.
Has he opened the shed door yet?
He's all right. He's let me off so far.
All right, good stuff. You'll go in there sometime and he'll have built something with all these plastic bottles, glued them together or something.
Oh, probably. At least they'll have gone to good use.
So we're saying, so beforehand, the plastic bag drawer, do you know the drawer where we all used to keep our plastic bags are in under the sink?
Yeah.
You open the drawer and they hop out at you like they were attacking you. The shed now is, if you're lucky enough, that's going to be the new disposable bag drawer, isn't it? You open the door and the bottles are just going to come tumbling out.
I think it might be,
All right, okay. Listen, May, listen.
Because you can't even crush them down either, so you've got to leave them whole.
They have to be pristine.
Be able to leave them so they can come with space.
I know.
Yeah.
All right, mate, it's crazy, isn't it? But thanks so much for joining us and sympathies to
your
better
half. No bother. Thanks
very
much for taking the call, Greg.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks very much.
All right, take care. That's May there, 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts to that number. Just listen to the conversation about roads. Can you find out if the 245 road from Creasler to Carrigart will ever be resurfaced? This is a very busy road with delivery lorries, trucks and tourist traffic, but does not have a footpath or cycle path, and the road is in disrepair. The road's extremely busy, and even more so in the summer months with holidaymakers going to Carrigart and Downings. Now, this is a road that's come up on this show a number of occasions, and this is also a stretch of road that gets mentioned to me out and about. There's a few different roads that people are saying, well, what's the story there? And only this week someone asked. I don't know. 500 grand. Well, firstly, there was a planning application for this that was put in wrong and then rejected, and then it was put in again. The government announced €500,000 for this, if my timelines are correct, in 2022. Exploratory works or preparatory works, wherever you want to say. Then the minister was up in the area in the end of last year, I believe, and €500,000 was announced again. Now, I'm not sure if this is the same €500,000. So either €500,000 has been allocated already or it's a million. They might be double counting it. I don't know. Not clear. I'll try and find out. But I remember being told this road was going to start 2 years ago, this path between Carrigart and Downings. and no sign of it. There is no sign of the work beginning. Is there anyone knows what's happening? Where is the money? How is it being funded? What is the delay? There is also, I was told by someone, in the beach in Downings, on the far side of the beach, there used to be steps there. There's been a winding pathway built there, but it stops halfway up. And I was told the reason it wasn't finished by someone who was working on it was because they run out of money and there's no more money for another year. So there's two projects in that area that seem to be stalled because of lack of money. Now, I don't know what's going on there, but I seem to have very strong recollections of being told that that pathway between, and it is a very busy road, that pathway, cycleway between Carrigart and Downings would be effectively ready for this year. Anyone got an update on that? 086 60 25,000. See you after the news and obituary notes. Is Garda Grania is going to be in with the latest appeals from Garda Síochána then.